And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, WMNF 88.5 FM. Welcome to the afternoon. Let's go get started with Queen. Rest in peace, Tina Turner. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to Art in Your Ear and WMNF today. WMNF 88.5 FM, best little station in the nation. Thanks for being out there. If you have enjoyed The Skinny with that whole crew, you can always go online to WMNF.org and check out the programming page and listen again, share, do all that sort of things. I think there's also a podcast. You can get that on the podcast page and just have it sent right there to your phone. On today's show, so excited. Last night I went to see Alice at Jobsite Theater at the Straz. And it is, of course, based on Lewis Carroll's Alice. And it was astonishing. It was so much fun. I smiled all the way home. 30-mile drive, I smiled the entire way. So it'll be really fun to talk to some of the creators of Alice. Plus, we've got announcements for you coming up. And we have, let's see, I've got some new music from Rufus Wainwright with Andrew Bird, and something for our, what do we call it? We have something for our mental health month, and then I'm playing some vinyl for you. So stick with us. If you want to get in touch, please do send us a text at 813-433-0885 or go online and send an email to dj@wmnf.org. We're going to lower some Benny Goodman because life is cruel and we have to lower Benny Goodman. But to make it up to you, I have something just as fabulous as Benny Goodman. Let's see if I've got everyone. So we have three of the creators and performers of Alice, a show that opened two weeks ago at Jobsite Theater at the Straz. With us that you just heard, Katrina Stevenson. Welcome back to our In Your Ear. Oh,
thank you.
Spencer!
Hello.
So I'm so excited. I should put my glasses on I have Spencer P. Myers. What does the P stand for?
Paul.
Spencer Paul Myers is here in the studio. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And then on the phone, if I haven't done this wrong, I should have some Jeremy Douglas in the house.
That's me.
Yay! So, Jeremy, so I realize that all these roles are sort of fuzzy, but generally we have Jeremy doing music, Katrina doing movement and costumes, and Spencer doing visuals.
Yeah, so I was art director of the show, and I made all of the puppets.
The puppets, and there's so much to talk about. So I usually don't read anything about what I'm going to, because I want to experience it like an audience member.
I'm the same.
Didn't know there was going to be puppets. Didn't know that you all made the show, which was good to know, because I was like, how the hell did they find this piece? This is so perfect for them. This is so Uber. And I hope, with all of my heart, that some theater companies out there want to try to do it, because it was such a delightful, charming, and at some parts really moving show. Did not expect the moving part.
Nope.
Did not expect that.
It creeps up on you.
It does. So thank you all so much for doing it. And Katrina, I'm going to start with you. Where did the, if you know, and other people might jump, where did this idea get started?
Well, it was right after we did Shockheaded Peter, and we were looking at plays for the next season. And we love these devised pieces that really make use of our talents and our sensibilities. And I threw out Alice in Wonderland. I've been wanting to do one for decades, and it's public domain. From there, we basically let Spencer Myers take lead, because he's been living with these books since he was born.
Yeah, I'm a little slightly obsessed with Alice in Wonderland. And apart from acting and stuff, I'm also a visual artist. And I have been painting Alice in Wonderland for years. I'm also illustrating the book. And when this title came up, I immediately was like, yes, please, I want to be a part of this. And I want to do something visual for the show. And then it went from there. I know when we started looking, once we all agreed upon Alice, it first kind of like fell on my shoulders of combining the two books. And I know these books well. And so I went through, I had to cut some of my favorite characters out, but trying to make something that would also make sense for stage. What could be with puppets? What could be human? And after a couple of revisions, it then went into Jeremy's lap for music.
And Jeremy, when this came to you, the music is very eclectic in there. There's a lot of different types of music. I tried to pattern my song list, my soundtrack today to show that there's all this different types of music is in there. Did you break things into little pieces and score that? Or did you first kind of get an idea as how you wanted the whole thing to sound and then attack it?
So early on, we knew some of the songs were going to be straight up Lewis Carroll poems as lyrics. We weren't going to adapt anything. We were just going to take the words and put music to them. So that was the first thing that I did. And, in that, I was just trying to establish a general aesthetic for what the music was going to sound like. Then later on, there were songs that we knew were going to be adaptations of material from the books. And that's, where Colleen and Cassandra came in and, adapted some of these passages from the book into lyrics. And then even gave me like very helpful pointers as to how rhythmically the lyrics should work, the basic ideas of melody structures and stuff like that. And then I took the work that they did and set about to sort of adapting their first draft into the aesthetic that I had already established with just the straight up Lewis Carroll poem.
Can I ask you, was that a keytar that I saw?
No, that's a melodica.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like a, it's an acoustic instrument. It's like an accordion or a harmonica. It's the same principle.
It's got a great sound.
Yeah, it's neat. It's, you know, you just blow air into it like an accordion or harmonica. It's just different how the air gets to it.
Right. Oh, it's wonderful. Well, so dear listeners, we're speaking with three of the creators and performers at Alice. That's at the Strauss Center, and that is there until June 4th, is
June
it?
June 4th.
Is there any chance that it maybe might? Nope. Oh,
no,
man.
The room is booked, and we're moving on after this. So tickets are getting
very,
very short.
I really do want to come again
short.
Now that I see it. Yeah, so all right, I'm going to have to work hard. So I wrote notes, and I can't really read my notes that I wrote. but one of the things that there were several songs in there. They're like showstopper songs, and right near the beginning, there's a big ensemble song, and it was like so good. I was like, oh, we can all go home now. Like this was just fantastic. But there's all these different things. Now, did you know when the show started? You mentioned puppets. Did everyone know right at the beginning there were going to be puppets?
Yes.
Yes.
So puppets right from the start. Had you made puppets before, Spencer?
No.
That's what I thought. So you not only were doing like all this stuff, but you're like, I'm going to learn how to make puppets.
So I had just come off of Avenue Q, performing in Avenue Q at the Strauss Center with Julia Ruffino and Ryan Sturm, who were both in the show. And Jeremy Douglas, who, you know, played for the show. And so puppets were all on our minds. And you know, we talked about if we're going to do Alice and send people dressed in rabbit costumes and stuff like that. And, you know, we would have, you know, puppets on stage. And David and I talked about it. And he's like, do you think you could make them? And I was like,
yeah,
I think.
How hard can that be?
So 6 months later of doing research, and then like a good 4 solid months of a lot of tears and a lot of frustrations, right, and mental breakdowns, I eventually am very proud with all the things that, you know, are on that stage. They're all weird. They all fit a very unique aesthetic, which is mine, which is a little kooky and weird and sometimes can be scary, but also very delightful and very bright and fun. So I'm very happy with that. But yeah, it was a long journey.
Well, what was so interesting is, you know, the puppets have sort of more entered the mainstream. I mean, mainstream is a weird way to talk about a theater, but where it's not unusual to see puppets in a show that is geared towards all ages or towards adults. And watching the puppeteers, or not even puppeteers, they're performers who are performing with puppets, is so interesting because they're performing and they also, their puppets are performing and they're in sync. And it is, it's at first you're like, what? And then it's so fascinating to watch. I felt that's why I want to see it again, because I was like so fascinated by that. I'm like, oh, I need to be watching that. There's so much going on the stage. Was the idea, and this is I would like everyone to address this kind of from their sort of area, the idea of having an overwhelming, or I mean, not overwhelming in a bad way, but there's so much to look at. And even when there's one character speaking, there's other things to it's just a circus going on.
I think you hit the correct word. That was, you know, we call it a cabaret. We call it, you know, a theatrical experience. Yes, we did add circus elements literally in with aerial performances, but that it ties over from when we did Shockheaded Peter, that there is that circus vibe to it, where it's always going to be fun. There's always something exciting about to happen or currently happening. And it just kind of delights and leaves your jaw dropped. And you're not sure exactly what that was, but you're like, that was awesome.
And I just, for, oh my gosh, I just got, let me look. I just got the gentleman's name. Blah, 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 blah. Where's his, what? Where's his name? Jabberwocky.
Robert Spence Gabriel.
Here. So his hand movements. So the costumes, did you do?
Yep.
The costumes are so much fun. And, you know, there's like a simple palette. Like the palette is pretty easy, but the costumes, but there's these details about it. And to me, that's part of good directing and choosing the right people to be in the ensemble and letting people, or I should ask, letting people to figure out what they want. But there was just, I mean, my note, one of the notes I can read is, I've never seen such sarcastic hands, you know? And so I love that. When you all were, so again, going back to these pieces that we have to put together, the music, of course, is essential. The lyrics were some what written in some cases and adapted and made. There's the visuals, there's the performance, there's all this. What is that process? Like, is everyone moving ahead at the same time and checking in? Or is everybody like, everybody runs over to see what you're doing with the costumes and everybody was like, I want pictures, Spencer, of the puppets. How does that?
Well, one thing that really helped with this process is all of the, you know, like the more design elements, the technical elements were like hand in glove from day one. It's not like the costumer was off doing something else. I was able to see on a day-to-day basis what actors were doing, so I was adjusting my initial concepts as we went. I know Jeremy is exactly the same. He'd be like, that's what you're giving me? Cool. I'll take off of that.
Puppets, you know, we knew ahead of time the characters that were going to be puppets. As far as the visual of them, you know, Katrina was so wonderful with adapting my illustrations for some of these creatures in almost 100%, making their clothing look exactly how I drew them, which, you know, was amazing to see these things come to life. You know, so for me, it was most of my stuff was in the very beginning, you know, conversations with David, Katrina, and Jeremy, and hearing where things were going to go, hearing that all of a sudden the Mad Tea Party was actually going to have a song and a lot of action to it, and then made me go, oh, maybe I should change what the Dormouse does. And, you know, making the Dormouse then a portable puppet in a teapot that they could manipulate and move around, because, you know, there were talks of like maybe they're all going to switch chairs and move around to the audience. And I was like, oh, okay, we got to figure this out now. So for me, a lot of that was in the very early stages, and then coming in mid process after they had already been rehearsing and get to watch a stumble through and kind of look at things and think, oh, all right, well, we're going to have to, let's alter some stuff that we're making right now to kind of better serve the actors.
I like that stumble through rather than run through. So, and Jeremy, where were you, like on the, where did you start and where did you adjust?
I started on my own just in my house, just writing music to Lewis Carroll poems. We started, you know, we did some adjustments when we get into rehearsals when, you know, I wrote all these songs without any regard to who was going to sing them. I didn't know who was going to sing what. So we adjusted keys for most of the songs to accommodate people's different ranges. And there was some back and forth between Colleen and Cassandra and I about song form and can I cut this verse? Can I add a verse? I remember late in the process, I felt like we had a long time without a song, and that made me uncomfortable because it's a musical and we should be singing all the time in my head. So I wrote
operetta, you meant.
I wrote to David, I'm like, I want to add a whole new song that nobody had considered before, because there's this wonderful Lewis Carroll poem, the White Knight song, and I really wanted that to be a song. I was real captivated by the rhythm of that text, and so you'd be very late in the process, we added a whole new song that we hadn't even really intended for. I think of this, and I've said this before, I thought of this whole process as sort of like an ant. We're like an ant colony, and we're moving seeds into the ant hive, but where no one ant takes the seed all the way from where they find it to where it ends up. It gets dropped, it gets picked up by other ants along the way, and that's kind of how it ended up.
I don't
see one person at all, even with the music. I mean, I'm the music director, I'm the composer for the show, but I can't take full credit for all of that. I mean, everybody participated in all of it.
One of the things I was interested in is, as part of your early compositions, is that sometimes the music was sort of enlarging what was going on stage, but sometimes it was almost like commenting on it or reacting to, or, you know, presenting a different case. It was counterpoint to it. I'm not sure what the proper musical terms are for doing that, or theater terms for doing that. So, like, when do you sort of, is it just experience and knowing music to know this is when I'm going to sort of go a little bit more vaudevillian, and this is where I'm going to get perhaps maybe a little more sentimental or touching? You know, were there times when you're like, yeah, I'm just going to go for it. This is forget it. I'm going for it. Will you talk a little bit about that part of knowing kind of what is right for a time or place in the show?
Yeah. So before the whole mess of the last few years, I was music director at American Stage for their improv music theater shows, where, and I learned so much, but we would just get up on stage, me and a piano and six or eight, you know, different actors, and we would completely invent one act musical from an audience suggestion, songs, lyrics, scenes into songs, all of it just made up on the spot. And at first it was harrowing. And then the more we did it, the better I got at being able to instantly interpret some stage action into underscore or into a song. And then so that all of those skills really helped me with this process. There's the whole scene with the trial. Queen does it. And I really wanted that to be like, you see these videos on the internet of, like, you know, somebody having a public meltdown, and then somebody will come along and play piano to it, and it matches perfectly. I really wanted to recreate that in the trial. And I remember when we finally got that trial nailed down, I videotaped it, and then I took it home, and I just ran that trial scene like 100 times in my house, playing piano to it, trying to achieve that live. You know what they do. You know what you see in these public meltdown videos where somebody's accompanying it,
right? And making it seem spontaneous, which was the fun part, is that it seems spontaneous, like everyone just kind of came up with this on the spot. You know,
and we did through several spots in a row. You know, we kept doing it and we kept doing it, but yeah, ultimately it was just sort of like, I feel like putting some music in here. Everybody cool with that?
Yeah, sure. It's a job site way. I want to remind listeners, that's Jeremy Douglas. In the studio with me is Spencer Myers and Katrina Stevenson. They're here for Alice, which is at Jobsite Theater at the Straz. I saw it last night and just had a complete blast watching it. Just really enjoyed it. And I just want to mention that I could see bringing kids to it, but I couldn't see bringing little kids to it. Is that kind of... what, like real little kids?
We have said that it's for the young or the young at heart. It is a real play in a real theater. The music can get loud. It can get, I don't know, boring for small children. It could be frightening for small children. We don't present anything that isn't in the books by Lewis Carroll.
Right.
So it's not like we're adding in things that would be inappropriate, but we're also not ones to tell people what they should show their children.
Right. But also it's not, you know, it moves at a pace. You know, sometimes children's theater moves at a pace that might be, you know, oh, it's rambunctious, but there's a clear storyline. And here there's all these different, it's not a clear storyline, yeah, which I enjoyed. It's a very surreal, absurd show, and I mean absurd with the most fondness I can say. I just want to mention that Lou in Ybor City just sent a picture of his tattoo in, which is where it says we're all mad here. Mm-hmm. So you have another lover of Alice in Wonderland friend. And yeah, I was going to send you guys. I didn't do it because I thought that was stupid. But my mom made me a Queen of Hearts costume when I was little for Halloween, and it was my favorite thing to wear. Like. Every single day,
yep.
You know, and when I finally grew out of it, I was like, more. And she's like, grow up, kid. You're 15. Stop. So thank you, Lou, for sending that. One of the other parts of the show, which I thought was really interesting, is that I love that, you know, the band is, Jeremy, you're on stage the whole time. We can see you. Peaks of the drummer's name, who I just forgot. Enid? No.
Woody.
And I think Mark Warren was on the other thing. But there was all these like strange, like there's the, not the Cheshire, the Caterpillar, like that part. So it looked, I thought at first that was a video, but it wasn't. It was a performer.
Uh-huh. It's a live puppet.
Yeah. And that was like, there's all the unexpected, I guess. And how Jeremy just talked about how there wasn't music. And he's like, hey, new song, everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't care if we're opening in 27 minutes. We're doing a new song. So is that a normal thing for job site theater productions? Or was there, because this was something that was so organically growing by you guys, that that everything went until it didn't. Like, everything was fine to try out. Like, what was the idea? Or was it more disciplined than what I'm picturing?
No, I mean, especially David Jenkins, who directed this circus extravaganza.
Have fun in the Galapagos.
I know, he's in the Galapagos Islands right now looking at sea turtles. That's in any piece, whether it's a Hamlet, it's a Dracula, whatever. He wants to play, to find the things. He's not a director who's going to dictate, we're doing this, we're doing this, we're doing this. He understands that the performers will bring true life to a script if it is created organically, whether you have the words and songs to begin with or not. And we've done pieces like this before, and some of us really jones on, let's just try something. This is weird. This is, let's tell this story through a body as opposed to words or, you know, that kind of thing. So when he would see something that he'd like, he's like, yes, and let's do that. And so then it did start to get more disciplined, obviously, as we discovered those moments. But David, as a director, and we as performers, you don't hire people because you know the end product. Mm-hmm. You hire them because through the experience, you're going to get something amazing.
They're going to add. They're going to add.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to talk about, so there's six performers, I think, in
seven.
Seven performers, and people change around what they're doing. Julie, I think, is the only person that sticks.
She is only Alice.
Only Alice.
And Robert Spence Gabriel is only the Jabberwock.
Right.
It does double as Knave of Hearts.
Oh, yeah. Right, she's got that 30 seconds.
Very quick doubling. But Julie is the only one who is absolutely consistent the entire show as one character.
Right. So is that, you know, because, I mean, sometimes when people do that in certain shows, I'm like, how do they switch, like, total personas and stuff like that? I think it seemed to me, no bad anything intended, it didn't really matter that much that you're, like, switching personalities because, honestly, the Red Queen was not super, or was it the Red? No, Colleen was the Red.
She was Queen of, Colleen is Queen of Hearts. I'm the
Red
Queen.
The Red Queen. You know, it was fine. You know, like the White Queen, like everything was sort of an extension. And when I was little, my mom also was a big, I loved this book so much. My mom loved it. And her theory was that it's all one character. And this is all this is all Alice. And these were all the people in Alice's head. So everyone was just a big, you know, blob of the sameness, and these are the different parts of the person coming out. So was that, I mean, was that true for the performers, or was there, like, did people have to sort of understand, this is who the Queen of Hearts is, this is who the Red Queen is, this is who the, you know...
For us as performers, we really have to compartmentalize. Mm-hmm. If not, it just turns into you wearing a different hat and talking in a squeaky voice. So each of them, you know, do have their own personality, their own way of talking, their own way of moving, usually.
Well, the twins certainly had different ways of being on the aerials. You know, like, they acted differently when they were in those adorable costumes. Those were great costumes.
Oh, my. Talk about inspiration. Spencer's original idea for Tweedledee and Tweedledum were these, like, it was Victorian men bathing suits these kind of two pot-bellied old men.
Just on the seashore, you know, just having a good time. And, you know, when I was doing the character breakdown and who would play what character, I was like, well, if we have, you know, the two Ariels, they have to be Tweedledee, Tweedledum. And I'm like, well, let's do the same, you know, idea, except make them...
Oops, that's okay. Just ignore it. They'll go away.
let's do the same idea, but, you know, this whole Victorian, swimsuits, like, they, you know, stroll on the boardwalk. But I was like, but let's make them circus performers. And they're, you know, Dee Dee and Dumbella. I mean, I'm like, let's go for it.
Yeah. Right. We need more. And, you know, one of the interesting things about it is that not the last song, I hope I'm not giving away, but not the last song, but what had seemed like the last song was... unexpectedly touching, and it was lovely. And after all, the, like, woohoo, and the craziness, and the ins and the outs, and the silliness, and the lobster hands, and, you know, all those different things. Like, a touching, loving, lovely song. Did not expect that.
Well, and Dreamland, and I'm going to let Jeremy touch on this one, but that poem is actually not from either of the books. It's a separate Lewis Carroll piece, and it's dark, but so bittersweet. If you think about, you know, like childhood, you know, leaving childhood, or, you know, that innocence that is lost or whatever that is. And just having Julia simply without any of the wildness going around, there are tears from the stage manager.
It would make me cry every single time. Every time she sang that song, I would tear up. And even still, like, I watched that song and listened to her perform it, and just there's something about the music and her delivery and those and that poem. It really is a tearjerker.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, will you talk about putting that song in there, writing that song and putting it in there?
Yeah, that was the first one I wrote for the show. Dreamland and the one that comes right after it, Boat Beneath the Sunny Sky, those were the first songs that I wrote, and they established sort of how I wanted all the other songs to be. The DNA of all the songs of all the songs in the whole show are come from those two songs. That and the opener too. The opening song, Child of Pure Unclouded Brow. Those are all straight up Lewis Carroll, unadapted by us. Just took the words and put them in the music. And so when we started getting into the adapted material, I started borrowing from those songs to keep it cohesive throughout the whole thing. But yeah, I was worried because I kept writing these very sweet, touching little melodies for these songs, and I was worried that we were going to have a big downer of a show if that was going to be a trend.
But, you had to get it out of your system,
right? But it was actually very nice to do that. That the first song of the show, "Child of Pure Unclouded Brow," and then the last two songs, which are essentially one song mashed together into one. They share a lot of the same thematic material. It was a nice bookend, for the show, for the music.
That's a wonderful way to put it. There's so much to talk about. I want to make sure that I'm covering everything. And I do have to give just shouts out to the performances. And I want to mention the name of some of the other actors. So, of course, Cassandra Rose, who does the Ariel's with you and is the White Queen and performs and contributes. And that's what I find so interesting. It sounds like that that everyone was contributing, that it was not, you know, and I appreciate that so much about Jobsite, is that no one is like sort of like taken like, oh, this is mine. Like, it's all ours, which kudos.
She also helped with choreography for some of the dance numbers.
Right, and the dance numbers are really fun. A little bit silly. So Colleen Cherry is just an astonishing talent, like that. And as I mentioned before, Robert Spence Gabriel's hands, he was just, he was very delightful to watch. Everyone was. Julie Ruffino does Alice, and Ryan Strum and Donovan Whitney were also had the different characters. And that was one thing that you did. Was it just, so you had how many puppets for Alice? There were three puppets for Alice?
There are three Alice puppets.
Right. And then the rabbit has two puppets or?
Only one. There's a white rabbit and then the March Hare.
Oh, that's what it is. March Hare and stuff like that. So there was that. Were you, when you were creating the puppets and trying to, think like, okay, I want them. Was it like, I mean, you already had your drawing, so that, of course, gave you a start. But did you want to, like, have further separation in through the size of them or through colors? So what was important for the visual part of the puppets?
For visual, I wanted to keep them as close to my artwork as possible. Mm-hmm. But sometimes 2D does not necessarily work for 3D. And March Hare, both Dave and I discussed, we wanted it to be almost a human-sized hare to match the tea party scene.
H-A-R-E.
Yes, yes. And was the very first puppet I made. A little heavy. Ryan does a really amazing job with that puppet. And adjustments had to be made, for performers. But really, it was visual first. And then as making them, can this actually be used by a performer? Because after doing Avenue Q, luckily I also know enough of what Torment would be upon a performer with these puppets. And some of these are not easy puppets to manipulate on stage.
Because I don't know anything about this, and I hope you don't mind me using a little extra of your time. I have no idea what it is to manipulate a puppet outside of going wah, 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 with my hands. So was there like the weight of the puppet, obviously, but would it be like how you hold a puppet, how you...
And that becomes performer too.
Right.
I mean, you know, I wanted them to be able to create their character. They had been, you know, working and rehearsing these things with what their supposed character would be. Once you get a pup in your hands, everything changes, and mm-hmm. then, you know, trying to adapt. It was partly of why Ryan was cast in the role he was, because he is such a phenomenal puppeteer and with a beautiful voice and a wonderful actor. So, you know, giving him the majority of the puppets, knowing that every single puppet was going to be completely different and that mm-hmm. he would find ways of going around it. I did make some adjustments on one of the puppets in particular for him, mm-hmm. Because it was a cruel thing I did. It was way too, heavy of a puppet.
Don't put chains in a puppet. You know what? We're almost out of time, and I have other things to ask, but I'm just kind of wondering from everybody, what are some things that you want people to look out for, or, you know, be ready, like delight? What are some of the things that you think, oh, this, the audience, like, make sure you don't miss this, or this is something that is so delightful that you can't wait for the audience to see it?
I just want them to enjoy, and the best thing in the world is at the end of the show and you just see them either singing along or just the biggest grins mm-hmm. on their faces when those lobsters are out there dancing.
No.
And the audience can't help but grin because
I sneaked a lobster picture in.
Okay, that's fine. But yeah, that's what I want people to look for is, you know, don't look for high art or whatnot. Just come to enjoy yourself.
Right. Yeah. It's super, super fun.
Have fun. Those books are nonsensical. They, you know, trying to find a plot within those books, there isn't
one. No plot.
So, you know, to be able to come to theater, to have fun, get out of the house that is family friendly, and then just enjoy. I second Katrina. Don't try to find the world changing view within this show. This show is not built that way. It's the music is wonderful. The performers are so wonderfully talented. It should just be taken as a night of fun.
And you all look like you're having fun on stage. And I think that, you know, and I remember, I think it was Lizzie, going to see Lizzie. Was Lizzie in the Jabe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So seeing Lizzie, and at one point, and I'd gone to the dress, because I went to the dress rehearsal, and people were so happy with some of those parts. They were having a blast. Mm-hmm. And knowing that the cast is having a ton of fun mm-hmm. just adds a bunch. Jeremy, is there a certain thing or a specific thing about Alice that you want to make sure people grab onto when they're in the theater?
Yeah, you sit on the side. So you can see that there's two other musicians.
Yeah, they're a little hidden.
They are a little hidden. So, well, thank you all. So if you want more information, you can always go online to Jobsite Theater. It's Jobsite Theater, spelled American way, TER.org, and then /Alice/, or you can go to the Art in Your Ear page or Facebook page or a group, because I've got the information everywhere there. The show is up through June 4th. Not a ton of time. It's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday,
Thursday through
Thursday,
Sunday.
Thursday through Sunday.
Some shows are sold out.
Right.
So
this is not, if you do want to go, think about looking pretty soon about it. And, you know, and there's... I have to stop saying, there's just so much. I really wish I could read more of my notes, because I thought I was being really, it does say unexpectedly poignant song. And it was unexpectedly poignant, but it was actually perfectly poignant on it. Thank you all so much for coming in. So, and thank you, Jeremy, for calling in, especially since you guys worked till late last night and then you showed up today. I really do appreciate it. And of course, I have a version of an Alice song for you. Probably not always the right one here on Art in Your Ear on WMNF. Please stay tuned. We've got announcements coming up, and I think I saw Ed walking around. He might be popping in for a minute. Take care.
أصغر ثم تعلو of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and a window that looks out on Corcovado. Esse amor, uma canção pra fazer feliz a quem se ama. Muita calma pra pensar e ter tempo pra sonhar. Da janela ver seu Corcovado, o Redentor, que lindo. Quero a vida sempre assim, com você perto de mim, até o apagar da velha chama. E eu que era triste, descrente desse mundo, ao encontrar você eu conheci que é felicidade, meu amor. Assim, com você perto de mim, até o apagar da velha chama. E eu que era triste, descrente desse mundo, ao encontrar você eu conheci é felicidade, meu amor.
You can help WMNF now and into the future by donating gifts of stock, real estate, retirement assets, or a life insurance policy. It's easy to leave a legacy of love. Just call Ian at 813-238-8001 or go to WMNF.org/plannedgiving to get started today.
That would be lovely for you to do that. Also, just want to mention, we have a fund drive coming up in, I think in 2 weeks from today. Art and Year will be raising a couple $1,000s. If you enjoy the show, if you enjoy what we do, if you want to keep Art Chat and the music I play on the radio, if you want to send a signal that talking about art and creativity is important, I urge you to please go to WMNF.org and go to the Art in Your Ear page, or just anywhere, hit the tip jar and put in what you can afford to do. If you can afford $5 a month or $10 a month to your radio station, that would be really lovely, because we always have a big goal and 55 or 54 minutes to make it. So that would be great. I want to let you know a couple of things going on around town. Tempest Projects next Thursday night has Music School, the Art of Concert Posters. It's going to be featuring Ryan Charles Gallagher's work. And then there's going to be a discussion moderated by our own and everyone's Ray Roa. And that is, again, Tempest Projects. That is in Ybor City. They are located at, it's 17th and 7th. Here we go. It's 1624 East 7th Avenue on the second floor. Another thing that opens up on the 1st, June 1st through the 18th, is Arthur Miller's All My Sons is going to be going up. Part of Tampa Repertory Theater is opening that June 1st, next Wednesday through the 18th, and that's up at USF Theater Center. If you want more information, you can go to tamparep.org and get that. I got to get out of here. I see the beautiful and wonderful E-Love in the studio getting ready to go. I promised you some Andrew Bird and Rufus Wainwright. This is their new song, Harvest. I hope you all have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Please take good care of yourself and be safe and take care of each other. You are listening to WMNF Tampa, WMNF 88.5 FM, the best little station in the nation. My name's Joellen Schilke, and this is Art in Your Ear.
I see you down in a young girl's town with your mother in so much pain. I was almost there at the top of the stairs with the screaming in the rain. Did she wake you? To tell you that it was only a change of plan. Dream up, dream up. Let me fill your cup with the promise of a man. Did I see you walking with the boys? Though it was not hand in hand. There was some change of plans.